Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls unless we ask for them, because we have with us on the line Ron Brown, who deals in gold and silver, and Ron does support us here at Radio Liberty, and we support him. We think he's an honest man and always enjoy having him with us. How are you doing, Ron?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan.
Well, I just wanted to simply start out with a quotation I've used many times, but I think it's so important. Daniel Webster, who said, "Of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes him with paper money. Of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes him with paper money." And this was brought to mind a couple of days ago. I had Bob Chapman on the line, and he was telling me that in Detroit, why, you can buy a house there for $29,000. The bottom's dropped out of the housing market, Detroit. Of course, I knew that Detroit was having some problems, but a house for $29,000 in a major metropolitan area, I found that a little hard to believe, but, well, Bob's usually pretty right. Well, today, going to my various articles, I came across an article that was talking about what's going on in Detroit, and it says you can buy a house in Detroit for less than you can buy a car. And they have all sorts of houses there where the people have simply walked away from them. Why? Oh, basically, the people have actually owe more money on the house than the house can be resold for. They've just walked away. They can't sell them and make a profit. They can't sell them and recoup their money at all, and everything they put in the house is being lost. And they're auctioning these houses off, some for $29,000, and some for $20,000, and some for $15,000, and some for $9,000. At one point, the auctioneer was saying, "Why, the lumber in the house is worth more than you're offering. Come on now, fellas." But people are not buying the houses. They mentioned some fellow who sold his business a year ago, made $500,000, started buying houses with the idea he was going to rent them and make a lot of money, and the house he bought last year for $70,000 is worth $30,000 this year. And of course he's sick, but of course when you try to anticipate the system that we're in, you're going to get into all sorts of problems. Well, this evening, after my afternoon program, I talked to our good friend Constance Kumba, who practices law back in Michigan. I told her the story, and I said, "Constance, is there any truth to this story?" And she said, "I live in a very affluent area of town, and I drive down the street, and it looks like a ghost town, and the empty houses, every place." She said the whole infrastructure of Detroit is collapsing. She said, "I had a mortgage broker in my office today who has done very well in the last few years. He told me today that 90% of his business is gone, and he doesn't know whether he'll be able to survive." Now, we're talking about what was once a bustling town, a major metropolitan area. The center was known as Motor City, but Motor City is not Motor City anymore. So much of automotive production is moving to China, Japan, to other countries throughout the world south of the border. And this is not happening by accident, it's happening by mistake, by intent, and of course, how soon before this begin happening elsewhere? Well, Ron, why don't you pick the story up from there? What are you hearing?
Well, I had two stories just this week. I've got a client in Miami area, Florida, and He told me he put his, he had a rental town, condominium, not a town home, a condominium on the market. And at the time he put it on the market, the appraised value was $183,000. Here we are a year later, he's got his price down to $136,000 with no takers. He said the bad news is there's two units in his complex that have an extra bedroom relative compared to his, and they're on the market for $116,000. So, you know, while Detroit, you might explain it away as it's because of this rare thing happening in the auto industry, it really is happening all over the country in a slightly less, you know, exaggerated manner. And another story I had was a fellow right in your area. In fact, I won't mention his name, but you know him. He was a doctor, and I think he got fed up with trying to practice in California area, so he moved up to Washington State. And he told me he put his house on the market for $2.2 million, but had to discount it by $650,000 to sell it. But at least he sold it, see. So there's a lot of people, like you say, stepped in and bought these houses near the top of the market. Zero down payment or very little down payment. Now they've dropped 20, 30, 40%. They couldn't sell it if they wanted to, because if they did, they might have to come up $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 at the closing just to close the sale, and they don't have it. So it's really tragic what's happening to a lot of people who didn't see the obvious, as far as I'm concerned. Anyone should have been able to see that they were making houses too cheap and too easy to get in over your head with these low arm rates and, you know, low down payments and so forth. So people took the bait, they got in over their head, now they're getting squeezed and they can't make the payments.
Yeah, and I think that this is all planned. Certainly, Alan Greenspan was encouraging people to take out adjustable rate mortgages. Why would any rational individual, and believe me, Alan Greenspan is a brilliant and rational individual who knows the value of solid money, gold-backed money, and knows the dangers of fiat money, why would he perpetuate this inflationary spiral? First of all, we had the stock market bubble. Then we had the housing bubble, and, well, of course, there are not very many more bubbles they're going to be able to come up with. And now we're beginning to see the Europeans beginning to raise their interest rates, which means we'll have to raise our interest rates, which will begin to slow down our economy even more. It looks like 1929 all over again. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm simply reporting. Ron was telling us some of the stories of things that he's experienced, people having to drop dramatically the price on townhouses or certainly homes that are trying to get sold, and you have to drop the price way down to sell them now. Now, it's not happening every place in the country. Some places, why, the prices have stabilized, or some places they're still going up a little, but many places they're beginning to fall, they're overbuilt, and more people are not able to make the payments on their homes and are eventually going to lose them. And we were simply pointing out that Alan Greenspan and the people who control our monetary system were encouraging people to participate in the housing bubble, were encouraging them to take out adjustable rate mortgages. And these are brilliant men. Why would they encourage this housing bubble when they knew eventually it would begin to implode? And, of course, it would bring great suffering, unless there's an agenda behind everything that's going on. And why just at this time in history, when, of course, the situation is heating up in the Middle East, it looks like it's only a matter of time before Israel comes under attack, and if that should happen, it could very well spill over into Iran, and we could be drawn even deeper into a war over there. And, of course, the solution to any sort of a monetary crisis is a world war. It's happened over and over again, and I really fear that this may well be where we're headed. Well, you know, it was interesting. The price of gold has been rather latent for, about a month or so. And then I noticed like it was beginning to pick up this today. What happened to it today, Ron?
Gold was up about $4 on the close. It actually was up $6 or $7 at one point today. And silver closed up 17.5 cents. So, you know, few weeks or a month ago, I don't remember, time flies, I guess, when you're having fun, but they busted the gold from, what, $690-something dollars down to 640-ish? 635, I believe, was the low. They busted silver down from, it was at 1475, and they busted it down just a matter of days to 1275. And then, of course, that scared the bejeebers out of a lot of people in the market, and yet it stabilized, and now it's just working its way back up. So, you know, as gold approaches these previous highs of May a year ago, when gold hit 730 and silver was at 1530, once it breaks through there, I'm convinced you're going to see gold and silver take off. See, it's been in a reprieve now for almost a year. Gold is less than it was a year ago now. So once it breaks through these resistance levels, I think you're going to see gold take off and silver take off. Of course, that's what the bankers are desperately trying to keep from happening, so that's why they keep manipulating these markets whenever they get close to these breakout points.
What's happening to the dollar? Is the dollar hanging in there, or is it beginning to just slump a little bit?
It's easing on back down. The dollar index is 83 today. When I wrote my newsletter a couple weeks ago, it was 84 point something, and that 82 to 83 level is a major, major support level. That again, once it breaks through there, then that's going to trigger the panic into gold and silver. So they work together.
Well, of course, for our listeners out there who are regular listeners to Radio Liberty, you realize that the government is trying to hide from the American people what's happening to the money supply. Of course, they're printing the M1 and the M2. But they're not printing M3. And those of you who don't know the meaning of these various terms really need to get our talk on the financial tsunami, and then, of course, to get the syllabus that goes with that, because we explain what all of these figures are. And M3 is the sum total of all the money increments and credit that's out there. But they said, oh, it's just too expensive to figure out what M3, we've been able to do it for, you know, the last 30 or 40 years, but it's suddenly too expensive, and oh, shucks, we just don't have the time, my secretary's too busy, you know, we're too busy, you know, trying to stabilize the economy to let the American people know what we're really doing, because the only way to know what they're really doing is to watch the M3 figure. Well, of course, we have people who do watch that, and they figure it's about 11%, which means that the government is increasing the money and credit about 11% a year, and that's the real rate of inflation. Inflation is not rising prices. Inflation is increasing the money and credit supply. So you're losing all of your fixed investments about 11% a year, and I think that's a real reflection of what the real rate of inflation is. And when they tell you that the inflation rate is 2.2%, remember, these are the same people who promised us we're going to get Osama bin Laden, dead or alive, and we got to go into Iraq because they got weapons of mass destruction. They're going to use them on us. If we don't get in there and get those weapons of mass destruction away, they're going to give them to Osama bin Laden or to somebody else, and the next thing you know, you'll see a mushroom cloud over New York. And they're telling us the inflation rate's 2.2%, and I don't think anybody really believes that. Do you believe that, Ron?
No one that I talk to believes that. But then there's a lot of people so tied into their traditional investments, they take these government figures and they plug it into their economic models and make decisions based on that, when it's just total fallacy, you know.
Every time I hear that, I always remember that story, you know, about the fellow who comes home and the woman comes home and she finds her husband in bed with another woman, and he jumps out of bed and he shouts at her, "Are you going to believe what I tell you? This is simply an accident. This woman just got a little ill and was laying. I just wanted to lay down. You're going to believe what I tell you? You're going to believe your lying eyes." And I really believe, unfortunately, that too many people believe what the government's telling them, and they don't watch and see what's happening at the gas pump, what's happening at the cost of medical care, what's happening at the price of much of the food that we buy at the food markets and things of that sort. And of course, inflation is a very real thing. And of course, I'm really very, very concerned that now what's happening is, of course, they're trying to dry up a lot of the money that's out there. and they're beginning to cut back on the carry trade. And what's happened in the past is both Switzerland and Japan have had very low interest rates, so you could borrow money very, very cheaply in Japan, there for maybe 0.5%, and in Switzerland for about 2%, 2.25%. And then you could lend that money that you bought in Switzerland and Japan, you know, added about 6 to 8 to 10%. So you carried the money from one sort of place to another. And if you were a hedge fund, and especially if you could leverage that, well, you were able to make money hand over fist. And a lot of these hedge funds have been making profits of 30 or 40 or 50% a year. But, you know, it's just like it's too good to be true. And now suddenly, why, of course, the value of the French, the Japanese yen is going up, and their interest rate is going up. And now you're going to have to pay a higher rate, and you're going to have to pay more to buy the yen to pay back what you borrowed. And the same thing is true in Switzerland. And so the carry trade is beginning to implode, and with that, of course, a lot of the liquidity that's out there through the world, which makes it so easy to borrow money. And as that begins to dry up, why, it's going to have implications as far as our entire economy, isn't it, Ron?
Sure, and if you think about it, our nation is running these massive deficits, as you and I have discussed many times. Our Treasury needs foreigners to buy $3 billion a day of our debt just to keep the treadmill going. And a lot of that demand was coming from this carry trade, because people would borrow money in yen at 1% or 0.5%, turn around and buy U.S. Treasury bonds paying 5 or 6%, and that was funding our deficits. Now, eventually, as they continue doing that over and over and over, inflation fears start to rise, and now they've got to act like a magician and pretend to be fighting inflation, so they're saying they're going to fight the carry trade. Well, now they're cutting off the hand that feeds them, see? So it's going to get harder and harder and harder to keep funding these ever-increasing deficits. You know, China and Japan and other nations are backing off of buying our debt. So I'm convinced that what's happening right now, Dr. Stan, is that as the buyers of our bonds start to dry up slowly, someone has to step in and buy those bonds. If those bonds were allowed to go into the open market unwanted, then the bond market would crash, bond values would go down, which by definition would force interest rates dramatically higher. If interest rates go higher, you know what that's going to do to the economy, especially the real estate bubble. But my guess is that the Fed is having to step in and monetize massive amounts of debt. And that's where you come up with this $3.6 trillion or $4.6 trillion deficit we're talking about, or at least that's part of it. So it's a little scary where we're heading, because we're just running out of rabbits to keep this game going.
And people don't understand that this is not the first time this has ever happened. Are the people who are manipulating our economy and, of course, running the stock prices up and controlling the commodity prices and keeping the price of gold and silver down, eventually are going to be incapable of doing that, because, of course, there are people in other countries who are concerned about the stability of their monetary system. The Chinese are actually making it much easier for their citizens to own gold and to purchase gold, and the Chinese are adding to their reserves of gold. The same thing is true in Russia, in India, in Brazil. All of these countries are buying gold, and of course, the central bankers who've been having this great time making a lot of money, manipulating everything, you know, and by dumping gold on the market, they're going to start running out of gold one of these days, and then there's going to be, of course, a run-up in the price of gold and the value of gold, and no monetary system based upon fiat money has ever lasted long. And remember, once again, of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money. We have a paper money system. There's nothing behind it. And, of course, history tells us that every system like this has eventually collapsed. That's the last thing they want you to realize until it's too late. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend Ron Brown as we explore what's happening to industry across America and what's happening to the national and state debts. Well, Ron, certainly one of the things that really bothers me here in the state of California where I live is the fact that the governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, has found the secret.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iOtterol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
And everything else, and then they invested in building apartment houses and condominiums and beautiful townhouses out along the beautiful coast of California, and they were going to make a killing. Oh my goodness, we're going to make a lot of money. You have to understand, everything is really predicated on two factors: greed and fear. Greed when you think you're going to make a lot of money, and fear when you realize that you're going to lose everything you have. And so many of the doctors there hawked everything they could. And I'll tell you, good doctors are seldom good businessmen. And good businessmen are seldom good doctors, and these were awfully good doctors. They had no business trying to be in this game, because they got in at the wrong time, and they had everything was hawked, and they had all these beautiful apartment houses and condominiums and townhouses out along overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and then they put them up for sale, and nobody had enough money to buy them, and people could not pay the 21% interest rate. You know, it wasn't there. And month after month went by, and they couldn't make the payments on the townhouses they'd borrowed the money on, and the apartments and the condominiums they'd built, and they had to make their payments every month, and they couldn't sell anything to raise the funds. And eventually, of course, some of them went, frankly, belly up. And, you know, so many people are overextended today. A lot of people have bought second and third homes because they knew they were going to make money on them, or rent them out or something of the sort. But I believe the day of reckoning is going to come, don't you, Ron?
I think it's already here for a lot of people. In a lot of the areas, they're already behind the eight ball, and they can't get out. You know, you and I talked two or three years ago about how in California things were so crazy and people were making so much money they were taking their equity, going out and buying houses for spec. And I think we said at the time 30% of the new sales were for spec, not for people to live in. And, you know, we commented at the time that when that bubble stops, all of a sudden you're going to have a inventory of houses on the market of at least 30% more than the demand is. And I think that's what's happening now. These speculators, once the prices start down, they have no choice but to try to get out. And they're dumping those houses on the market, and it's in certain areas it's really hurting already. But, you know, going back to 1980 when you were talking, the national debt, when we finished that blow-off, was less than $1 trillion. Yet our country went into a massive recession. In fact, by 82, if you recall, they were talking about a 29-style depression. And that's when President Reagan came out in June and said, basically, damn the torpedoes, folks, we're going to print our way out of this mess. And that's when we started the printing press rolling again to stimulate the economy, which created this massive boom, which has now lasted, 20-something years. But this time around, the debt is so massive that if they ever allow it to contract, if they ever allow us to go into any type of recession, it will feed on itself in a black hole like a 29-style banking panic. There's just too much debt out there, and if you ever let the economy slow down, people will start to default on their obligations just as they are, you talked about, with the subprime lenders, and that will just feed on itself. And so you better believe they'll come in and bail out the system somehow one more time or try to. But, you know, at some point, you totally lose your credibility, and I think that's where we are as a debtor nation.
Well, I fear very much that you're right, Ron, and I think that the people out there have to know where we're going. And I don't like to come on here a couple of times a week and give you nothing but bad news, but the news is bad, but it's going to get a lot worse. I mean, these things always go in cycles. This isn't the first time it's happened in history. It happened in ancient times. It certainly has happened, you know, in our own country. It happened during the Revolutionary War. It happened in 1812. It happened in, certainly in 1840, 1836, 1840. Happened during the Civil War. And then, of course, it happened in the 1870s, the 1890s, and 1907. And then, of course, it happened again in 1929. But none of them, of course, happened when we had a country that had no gold backing for its currency. And, of course, things are going to be far worse this time because at least we had a stable currency at the time. We do not have a stable currency. There are people who would love to destroy the value of the currency and take us into a new currency, something called the Amero or something similar to that. And, of course, it will be utilized for this new society they plan, the North American Union, which, of course, is a prelude to the New World Order and the New World Religion. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Ron Brown. And if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly we know the automotive industry in the United States is having real problems, and they're having to, of course, to try to cut their costs by squeezing the other companies, the companies that are supplying them, Delphi, the other people who provide the various things that go into the automobile parts, and the people who provide the motors for them. But some of these companies just don't have any more to give. In other words, they can't allow themselves to be manipulated because they're already either on the verge of bankruptcy or in bankruptcy, and I believe Delphi is actually in Chapter 11 at the present time. So, I mean, as we see more and more of our companies, our major producers moving into bankruptcy, well, we're going to have all sorts of problems. We just read this last week. They're selling off the Ohio Turnpike. They're selling off our major roads, many of our major roadways, many of our major bridges here. They're selling off the infrastructure of our society, an infrastructure that has been created and paid for by our people simply so that the local governments will have more debts, so the politicians can keep happy. And of course, but what happens is we're losing our factories. 25% of the factories in the United States, which used to be American-owned, are now foreign-owned, like Westinghouse. And if you get my syllabus and read it through, we list, hundreds of formerly major American corporations that are now foreign-owned. Well, let's go to Pete, who's calling us from San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Pete. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Hello, Ron Brown.
Hey, I know this. Your name isn't Pete, but I know who you are. It's good to hear from you.
Well, I just wanted to thank both of you very much because I have been listening to you for several years, and I took your advice to heart, and positive news have come out by, you know, taking heed to what both of you have told me, and I understand the Word of God much better. And I serve Jesus Christ even better because I look at life from a different perspective. And I just want to let everybody know that, you know, give Ron Brown a call. He'll talk to you, and he's going to charge anything to talk to you. And, of course, Dr. Stan, I call him up now and then.
Hold that right there, Pete.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have, of course, a gentleman who calls himself Pete from San Antonio, but that's not his real name. But I know Pete. He said he's been listening to our programs for some time, and fortunately, he sold his home in the San Jose, Santa Clara area at the right time, and has done very, very well. And we're certainly proud of you, and I'm glad you're doing so well.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you. Continue preaching the good word of Jesus Christ.
And we will, because behind, of course, all of this, we talk about money, but behind all of this are the powerful spiritual forces which are responsible for everything that's going on. And it's very difficult for people to understand that there could be anything spiritual about money, but we have a little pamphlet where we talk about the history of money, and you can see this thread of these forces that we talk about all throughout the history of modern times. Anything else you want to say, Pete, before we let you go?
Give Ron Brown a call. Other people will charge, I don't know, about $200 for 30 minutes, and Ron doesn't charge anything at all, and he'll talk to you as long as you want, and he talks about Jesus Christ and the Bible a lot, and he'll help you understand the money and gold and silver. God bless you all.
God bless. Thanks very much. Well, that certainly is a unsolicited call. Ron, why don't you go ahead and get your web page? I guess you don't have a web page, do you?
I just write a newsletter. In fact, I want to thank Pete. When I was trying to do this newsletter here back in February, I had it on my computer, and thank goodness I printed out a hard copy. But when I came back to work on it again, I totally lost it. So I faxed it to Pete in San Antonio, and he's a whiz kid on the computer, so he put it on his desktop publishing or whatever, and dressed it up for me, you know, scanned it in his computer and saved the day for me, so I want to thank him for that. But if anyone would like a copy of, I put a packet together for people, and my telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like make a comment or ask Ron a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And even though the stock market seems to have recovered, remember there's this working group that is set up by the government. It is simply made up of the head of the Fed, the head of the Security and Exchange Committee, the head of the Commodity Commission, one of the gentlemen, and they have unlimited amounts of money to manipulate the market, and they do manipulate the market. And what you're seeing on the stock market today has nothing to do with the economy. It all has to do with the perception they're creating in the minds of the American people. So that they will be optimistic. After all, things can't be bad when the Dow Jones looks so good, but it's pretty easy to manipulate the Dow Jones and a few other stocks. It's pretty easy to manipulate commodities, the price of gold and silver. What they're doing is frankly illegal, but who are you going to go to? Who are you going to complain to when the government's manipulating the perception of the American people to keep us fat, dumb, and happy just like the cows before they take them into the slaughter yard. Well, Ron, Christian, what do you foresee happening next?
You know, we've been talking about the subprime lenders and the real estate bubble, and you were talking about Detroit and the corporations that are getting squeezed, and yet what we haven't discussed is the pension plans of all these corporations, and the people have their life savings tied up in these pension plans of these corporations. And where do they have their money invested? Well, they have it in the stock market, for one. So if the Dow Jones or the stock market goes down, then their pension plans get wiped out, and most of them are unfunded now anyway. And then even to make matters worse is a lot of these subprime lenders, all of these bad loans were packaged in mortgage-backed securities and sold to a lot of these pension plans as a viable investment. And now they're stuck with this bad paper. So, you know, the more you read into it, the more you see this thing starting to spin out of control, where at some point they will just run out of rabbits or tricks to keep it going.
Well, I think it's really very interesting that if you look at the General Motors pension fund from an actuarial point of view, they need about $55 billion, as I recall, to bring this into line so it would be actuarially sound. Ford has just gone out and borrowed $18 billion and put everything they have into Hawk so that they can, of course, retool and move over to Communist China. But their pension obligation is $20 billion. So they've just put up, they got a loan of $18 billion and they're gambling everything, that they're going to be able to pull this thing off. But their pension obligation here in the United States is $20 billion to the employees that are still there. Remember, they bought a lot of them out. I think that the General Motors gave about $140,000 to buy out their employees. Ford gave $120,000 or $100,000. Chrysler's not offering anywhere near that much. And they're trying to get out from under their obligation to their employees. Did you see when Toyota and Honda and the others, Kia, are coming over here and open their plants? They don't have these tremendous health and pension obligations, so they don't have to make anywhere near as much money in the production of their cars. So they have a tremendous advantage over us. And, of course, once you get to China, you don't have to provide health or education or you don't have to have any pension funds for your employees. You don't have to follow Environmental Protection Agency rules. You don't have to provide OSHA rules. So it's like, it's just like the old West. Once you move to China, all the rules are off, and it's just nothing but pure profit. And, of course, this is why our major factories are moving to Communist China and why we are, of course, funding the best enemy that money could buy. So I think it's only, in fact, I was just reading this last week where the Chinese now are thinking of going full-time into the aeronautical field and going head-on into competition with Boeing and of course, Lockheed Martin. And believe me, they've learned from us how to produce planes, how to produce jumbo planes. We already have our federal inspectors over there who have been working with the planes being produced full-time in China for McDonnell Douglas. And so all they have to do is begin, of course, inspecting the planes that they'll be building in competition with Boeing. And how would you like to see prices in Seattle looking like they are in Detroit today? And don't think it can't happen. Because, of course, we're doing everything we can to build up the economy of communist China and destroy the economy here in America. That's what's known as globalization. And it is not happening by accident. It is happening by intent. And until people realize that there really are people who want to destroy the financial structure of this nation and impoverish our people, very little that's going on makes much sense. Would you agree or disagree, Ron?
Absolutely, and not to mention that they can use that new technology not to build just transport planes, but military planes and everything else. So China is in a tremendous position to start building a war machine that would be, unstoppable. We've sent all of our plants and money overseas, so they're building the new wealth. They don't need us to trade with nearly as much as they did 5 or 6 years ago.
And right now they have over $1 trillion in reserves, and about $700 billion of that is in American dollars. And what happens when they start just coming over here and buying more of our factories? They've got all these dollars. They've got to do something with them. Doesn't do any good to have them sitting there losing 11% a year. What happens if they begin investing in gold and silver and other tangibles and in other the commodities? Because in times like this, when you're dealing with a worldwide fiat money system, the only thing that has value is something that's tangible. Certainly not an entry in a banking ledger. And, of course, once they begin to disinvest themselves of American dollars, $700 billion of American dollars, now what happens when those start flooding into our country? Doubling the amount of money in circulation, because today we only have about $700 billion total money in circulation, and all those dollars coming in here would have a disastrous effect. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling in from Santa Cruz, and again our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi Mike, how you doing?
Oh, good, Stan. Since you guys are talking about China, I just wanted to call in and make a point and then ask a question. In warfare, opposing armies, amongst other things, they try and cut off each other's supply lines or, in other ways, control each other's supply lines, or even steal each other's supply lines. China, ideologically, at least, is an enemy, and they have become our supply line. What does this say for our vulnerability?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. And keep in mind, they're using all this surplus to go around the world and buy up the gold mines, the nickel mines, the zinc mines, the oil fields and whatever. So that's part of our supply line, too. So, yeah, they're cutting us off at every angle.
Yeah.
And right now, of course, they're pretending to be our friends, so everything's hunky-dory, but their goal is to be the king on the mountain. So.
Well, they love us. We're great friends as long as they're making all this money from us.
Sure.
And in the meanwhile, they get to own us even more and more. And I wanted to raise one little point, how easy it might be for them to totally destroy us. I've noticed that all of our nails, N-A-I-L-S, you build houses with nails. All our nails come from China. What if they were to stop shipping nails? What would that do to us? It just seemed to me that they could crash us by stopping that one thing.
Well, just look, they hold $1 trillion worth of our debt paper. All they have to do is start dumping U.S. Treasury bonds into the market, and they could cut off our supply line of easy credit.
Well,
yeah, we're very vulnerable to them, and we've put ourselves in a position where they can kind of dictate to us you know, how the cow ate the cabbage.
I started checking my dollar bills to see if they say made in China.
Well, I think what's even really more interesting is that, you know, our whole military is based upon electronics, and of course electronics are based upon chips. And many of the chips that are used in our most sensitive and most significant and most vital military weapons are manufactured in communist China today. We are totally dependent upon communist China for the supplies that will allow us to maintain our military. None of this makes sense unless there's another agenda behind everything going on. And this is our recurrent theme. Understand that nothing is as it appears to be. There are other forces out here that very, very few people understand. Anything else, Mike?
Well, that's it for now. Thanks a lot.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Mike calling in here from Santa Cruz. And if you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've noticed the price of gold and silver creeping up this last week or so. Has there been more people from, getting into the gold and silver market now? Ron, I know you're very, very bullish on silver. So what's happening? Are people sitting back, or are some of them really beginning to get involved?
You know, a lot of it, I just came out with that newsletter, and you know I write a newsletter about every other year, so I sent it out to my clients. So I've had an unbelievable barrage of people seeing what's happening and, you know, waking up, and yeah, they're jumping on board. I'm having tremendous month, you know, this month. These people are just buying hand over fist. So there's a lot of people starting to wake up to the dilemma that we're in, and they're starting to realize that the only hope is to try to get out of debt, get some of their money out of paper assets, which have been underperforming for the last, what, 4 or 5 years now. So they're starting to seek that final refuge, and that's gold and silver. And of course, that'll reach a breaking point at some point, because there's so little gold and silver out there relative to the amount of paper money that's being created that could potentially go after it. So at some point you're going to see an avalanche, I mean just an explosion in the price. You know, back in 1979, the bull market had started in early 70, 71, and it took 8 years for silver to work its way from $1.29 to about $6. And then in January, when we hit this breaking point, silver went from $6 to $52 an ounce in 12 months. So back then, you had less than $1 trillion worth of debt when it was all said and done. And today, you have maybe one-fourth as much silver and 10 times as much paper money sloshing around the globe, probably 20 times as much. So you can see it's going to be a shock when we run out of this glut of silver that we've been consuming now for the last 50 years.
Well, let's go to, I think we have Ron calling from Richland, Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I had talked to you, I guess, a couple of months ago about a video that I saw at work where they, video given by the head of the General Accounting Office, and he stated that the United States unfunded liabilities have gone from $20 trillion to over $46 trillion in 5 years.
Is that David Walker?
Yes, sir. I think that's who it is.
That is certainly very important. People ought to look him up on the Internet. David Walker, who is the CEO of the General Accounting Office, read what he has to say. And he's telling you, he said, we are bankrupt.
And he said, there's no way we can grow our way out of it.
Right.
No way. It's impossible.
Right. I think that is... He did actually an interview on CBS about 60 Minutes about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it was a very important interview, and I recommend that to everybody.
Well, something's got to be done. I mean, we've got to be done. We politicians get votes by promising to give our grandchildren's money away.
That's what it is, and they just hope they'll get out of office before the whole thing, the House of Cards, comes down.
Well,
and as David Walker points out, the only thing that you can do is begin cutting back dramatically, you know, on the Social Security and Medicare benefits. It's the Medicare that's going to bankrupt us, and then when we were already in trouble, what did George Bush do? He passed the Medicare drug bill that has a, you know, another $8 or $10 trillion of unfunded obligations.
Yeah, he said that one bill alone added more debt than we had accumulated throughout our history. But, you know, I don't blame George Bush. I blame us. I blame the citizenry.
Agree?
Okay, fine. What did you have a thought on that, Tom? Right.
Well, we, that is the citizens, have to take control of ourselves and get back to the Lord.
Amen to that. God bless, and I'm going to ask Mike from Billings, Montana, to hang on. Rod, I want you to give your telephone number just one more time.
1-800-595-0561. 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. I guess this evening has been of Ron Brown, and of course he deals in gold and silver, and he's certainly a reputable man. We appreciate having him with us. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, we have Mike calling from Billings, Missouri. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, hi. This is my first time calling in. You know, one of the things... Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that really bothers me, I listen to these different things about China, and yeah, that, I mean, it breaks my heart what's happening to the United States, but they wouldn't be building anything today if these manufacturers hadn't left this country due to the greed, their own greed. If they had just stayed here, China wouldn't be making anything for us today. At least I feel that's a problem. I don't know.
Well, you're absolutely right. The whole Chinese miracle was funded by the World Bank, which, of course, is funded with your money, the International Monetary Fund, which is funded with your money, the Export-Import Bank, the Asian Development Bank, and the manufacturers you're talking about, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citicorp. It's all funded with American money, right? And it's exactly the same way we built up communist Russia, starting back in 1918. What you're seeing is deja vu all over again, and you'll certainly want to read our March newsletter, which explains how we created in Russia the finest enemy money could buy, and how all during the Vietnam War we funded the Russians, who funded the North Vietnamese, who funded the Viet Cong, who killed our boys in South Vietnam, all during the Vietnam War, and the same thing's happening in Afghanistan today as we fund the Pakistani government that funds the Pakistani ISI, that funds the Taliban that's killing our boys in Afghanistan. It's deja vu all
yes.
over again, and nobody will tell you we're fighting another no-win war.
Yes, that's for sure.
But wait till we go to war with China. That's really going to be fun.
That would be a tough one to win.
Well, the question is, are we going to win it? And do we deserve to win it? And does God bring his judgment upon nations that have turned against him?
Exactly.
Anyway, God bless you. Thanks very
much. God bless you, Dr. Stan. Thank
just
you.
To please encourage all those people there in Billings, Missouri, to be listening.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Good night. Okay. Ron, you got about 30 seconds to wrap up the program.
You know, Dr. Stan, as we discuss all these negative things and where the country's going, It makes you feel helpless to do anything about it. And I think it really gets down to a spiritual crisis. And we've reached a point where, see, Americans are conditioned to do everything in their own understanding, and yet we've run into a point where there is no easy solution. Buying gold and silver may buy you a little time and protect you a little bit financially, but in the end, it's not going to be any salvation for you. So I think the message that we need to get out to everyone is that it's time to seek your maker and get closer in your relationship, because in the end, that's the only thing that's going to give us any peace.
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Ron was saying during the break that he recognizes that we're involved in a spiritual battle, and certainly it's fun to talk about the gold and silver, and we ought to be preparing ourselves, from a financial point of view, and we ought to be preparing ourselves from a fiscal point of view and get the things on hand that we would need to survive a difficult time and a collapse in our economy. But the only thing that will really see us through this is our relationship with the Lord. And of course, if we're not prepared spiritually, we may lose everything we have financially. We may end up in concentration camps. We may end up with slaughter across this country. We could end up with a nuclear attack or a massive epidemic or an invasion. We could certainly end up with civil unrest, the breakdown of the structure of our society. And if we don't have faith in our Lord and can rely upon Him and don't understand that we're going to have to be dependent on Him at some point along the way, why, we're certainly not going to make it. And so our certainly suggestion to you is exactly as Ron Brown has said. If you don't have a personal relationship with the Lord, tonight's a good time. And if you want to call me anytime off the air, we'd be glad to talk to you about it. But understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, but on a financial battlefield. That's what it's really all about. So that's the name of the game, Ron. God bless. Thanks so much for being with us. And we'll look forward to talking to you again next month.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. And ladies and gentlemen, we do hope that many of you out there, you know, if you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll want to get it. And you'll certainly want to get the items that Radio Liberty has. You want to know how they're poisoning our children? Why, you need to get the DVD or the video by Dr. Ayub. It's called, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. So you want to get the material we have on water fluoridation. They're poisoning our children. They're destroying their minds. You need to get the DVDs we have. We have about three of them pointing out that, of course, we're lowering the intelligence. If you have my syllabus of the Hidden Agenda, you'll see the scientific studies that come out of the journal Fluoride that I got permission to reprint. The article after article after article, there are 18 articles now, that showing that if you fluoridate the water, you lower the intelligence. Why would they do that in America? Why would anybody want to destroy the mind of the American people? And I would like to suggest, if you hate America, if your loyalty is to a different God and to a different structure of society, you would want to destroy the minds of the children of this country with fluoride, and you'd want to destroy it with mercury, and you'd want to destroy it with NutraSweet and the other, excitotoxins that cause neurological damage. And you can get all that information by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then there's DVDs or four tape sets or books, and certainly my talk on the Hidden Agenda and the syllabus that goes with that on the fluoride subject. It's the Hidden Agenda, the talk, and the syllabus. You need to get it. And there we've actually reproduced pages from the book written by Bertrand Russell, where he talks about how, you know, through the use of diet, injections, and injunctions, they're going to be able to control the minds of our children. See, I wonder what they're going to put in the diet that's going to control their minds, and what they're going to put in the injections that are going to control their minds. He also says, you know, that war is not as good a means of killing out large numbers of people to control the world population. Maybe if we had a black plague that would sweep the earth once in every generation, then there wouldn't be enough people around to really have to worry about. How could any human being take that attitude? And I'd like to suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, that people who may look like they're human beings and talk like they're human beings, but of course they worship a different God. And that's what it's really all about. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and our protection, again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and if you welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for calls, because right now we have with us Arthur Bernthal from Veterans for Constitutional Law. And Arthur is a veterans advocate, and of course he tries to intercede when the veterans who really have given so much for our country try to get their benefits they've been promised and rightfully theirs from the Veterans Administration, and the heartless bureaucrats, and you don't use that word advisedly at all, I believe that there are heartless bureaucrats who are paid large sums of money to deprive the veterans of what they've been promised, and even what members of Congress think that their veterans are going to be receiving. And, of course, Arthur's there to help them, and we'll tell you later how to get hold of him. But what you must understand is that whether it be the first Gulf War or the present Gulf War, when our boys are coming home, they're ill. Over a third, perhaps even a higher number now, of the men who've returned from the first Gulf War are ill and have a chronic illness. They call it the Gulf War Syndrome. And if you look at the statistics, and we have those statistics actually from a Veterans Administration study, there is no question there's a significant disability, you know, of the people who actually went off to that war. And if you read the Veterans Administration figures, which we got off the Veterans Administration website, of the 695,000 soldiers who went to the Gulf War in 1991, over 80,000 are dead. That's over 10%. Over 80,000 of them are dead. These are young, healthy people. They don't die at this rate at that time. And how could you cover up something like that in America? Well, the same way you can cover up the truth about global warming or Operation Keel Haul or the Great Hunger in China or Operation Paperclip or the 20 to 25 million men we abandoned to die in the Soviet Gulag after the Second World War, the so-called Helms Committee report. You can cover up anything if you have freedom of the press. And that is, if you control the press, you have freedom to suppress anything you want to. And then, of course, of those boys coming back from this war, those, of course, who have come back intact, they haven't lost an arm or a leg or two arms and two legs or their vision or... But about a third of those within 3 months are ill as well. They call it post-traumatic stress syndrome. They can't work. They can't support their families. What do they do? Well, they go to the Veterans Administration, and there's just no facilities there. Oh, we'll put you on the list. We'll get around to you one of these days. Arthur, you're on the front lines. How are our boys being treated when they come back from Iraq and Afghanistan today?
Not very well. They're not being treated very well at all.
Well, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, the Department of Defense has not appropriated the money for PTSD counselors, and they're claiming there are over 400,000 veterans waiting to get their claims settled. And the truth is, it's closer to 800,000.
Okay, you hold on to that line. We'll be back here in just a moment. Now, is that from the first and second Gulf War?
Yes. Yeah, that's from the two Gulf Wars.
Okay, go ahead.
The truth is there's almost 800,000, it's 700-some-odd thousand, still waiting to get claims settled. And the money is not coming in from the Department of Defense. They're finding money for everything else but to take care of the veterans who come back here. Now, there have been a couple of programs, a couple of good programs that Senator Craig has put out to try to help the wounded back here. Members of the military who are harmed while in the service of their nation or a nation's heroes. He's committed himself to raising money and getting these people some money until the government starts coming in with money that they should have come in with a long, long time ago. And as everybody probably knows, there was a law passed in December of last year allowing a veteran, after all these years, to retain an attorney when he gets a claim, when he gets his claim turned down by the Veterans Administration. Now, your corporate service organizations, and I'll name a few of them by name because they are the veterans' worst enemies of this country. The Disabled American Veterans, called the DAV, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, called the VFW, AMVETS, the American Legion. Well, the American Legion has stayed neutral on this pretty much because they're losing membership like you wouldn't believe. But the other three organizations have really attacked this law that was passed by Congress. It's a Senate bill, S-3421, which will allow them to retain an attorney on the first turndown. Right now, well, previously to this, a veteran would have to wait until the case was turned down by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, and that could take as long as 7 years before they could even hire an attorney. And the VA and their 12,000 attorneys are having a field day every single day against veterans' claims because these veterans are not represented. They've come in represented by the service organizations who are actually in bed with the VA. These corporate service organizations, they get every freebie under the sun.
Pardon me, Arthur, just hold that thought for a moment. Well, this is Arthur Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Birnbauer, Veterans for Constitutional Law. There was a law that was passed here during the last session of Congress that would allow the veterans who had actually applied to the Veterans Administration been turned down to have a legal representation, to hire his own lawyer. Well, of course, that's the last thing the Veterans Administration wants. They've got, you know, tens of thousands of lawyers to fight the claimants, but they don't want the claimant to have a lawyer to oppose them. And, of course, as Arthur points out, so many of the major veterans organizations are in bed with the government. They've sold out, and they represent the veteran in these hearings, and the veterans almost always lose. So, I mean, it's very advantageous. I mean, they've got to have money to give to Halliburton for, and so they could pay Dick Cheney a big fat pension. Some people might think that was conflict of interest, but other people just say he was just so valuable to Halliburton. They have to pay a very, very large pension fund. And so basically, instead of giving it to the veterans who I believe deserve it, they're giving it to Dick Cheney. And we know, of course, how deserving he is. But anyway, because you picked the story up there, Arthur, because now they're trying to defeat this law and take away the veteran's right to have an attorney to represent him against the government's attorneys.
Well, what they're trying to do, Dr. Stan, is they're trying to put through the entire veterans package, all the veterans laws, again, without the attorney provision. And they want to put it through the 110th Congress. The 109th Congress passed it, but two of the North Dakota senators, and I'm surprised because I expected it to be a couple of the arch conservatives. It's two liberal North Dakota senators, Senator Conrad and Senator Dorgan, who put their hand up to try to hold up proceedings, and then they let it pass with the provision that they're going to vote on it again in the 110th Congress, but what they're planning to do is they're planning to leave out the provision that will allow the veteran to have an attorney, put through the rest of the bill, but leave out the attorneys. And this was promoted by the Disabled American Veterans, Mr. Joe Violante, who is their legislative director, who I've invited to fill his hand with a weapon and meet me at sundown, but of course he won't. Anyway, we feel reasonably sure it's either going to be Senator Dorgan or Senator Conrad that is going to put this bill through and possibly attach it to another bill so it'll fly through Congress and nobody will know what they're voting for. This is the way they do business in Washington. They're called sleazy backroom Senate deals. And Washington is known for that, but this will be the sleaziest deal of all time if they are able to pass this. Just to give you an idea what goes on with these service organizations, my own file was cannibalized. Cannibalized means they went through it, the service organization who represented me at that time with the VA went through my file and started deleting evidence that would be of help to me. And I threw the service organization off my case, the Disabled American Veterans, when I found out how dishonest they were, which shouldn't have been a surprise to me because everybody had been telling me that right along, that these people cannot be trusted. And then I got the American Legion, and you jump right out of the frying pan into the fire. And the American Legion was not any better. In fact, the head lawyer from the American Legion told me at the time I went for my Board of Veterans Appeals hearing, they said, "We're going to give you our best man. You should have won your case years ago. We want you to win. We'll give you our best man." I said, "Look, you can have a guy sitting there who knows Title 38. Title 38 is the laws that govern veterans' benefits. And he can advise me, but in no instance is he to talk for me. I don't need him to talk for me. I can talk for myself. If he wants to give me any advice and sit there as a counsel, fine, I'll let him do that. But he is not to presume to talk to me in any way, shape, or form. I don't need anyone talking for me." So one of the charges I brought against the VA, aside from my claim for compensation, was that the VA destroyed all my records. And the adjudicator, they call themselves law judges now. That's a big joke. I mean, in no way, shape, or form are they judges. Said, "You're saying that most of your records are missing. Do you know what happened to them?" And I said, "Of course. You know, the VA has the best shredding machine in Washington. They probably found some stuff which would be good for my case, and it would be evidence in my favor, and they destroyed it." And just then, this clown from the American Legion, who was sitting next to me, jumps up and he says, "Well, that's only your allegation, Mr. Burncloud." He's supposed to be on my side. "That's only your allegation, Mr. Burncloud." To which I replied, "You better get him out of here, because if he doesn't walk through that door and leave this room, he's going to fly out the 10th floor window." And the judge there said to this American Legion in there, said, "You'd better leave the room because this veteran means business and he's not kidding, so you'd better leave the room." And then she said to me, "You'll have to sign a waiver that you're not being represented." I said, "I'll be glad to. I was never represented anyway. I don't consider these service organizations as a representative for veterans. They're in bed with the VA." And, they were beside themselves when I said this in the court. Of course, you know, it was not written into the minutes. So they deleted it when I said they're in bed with the VA. So they deleted it. Anything a veteran says usually gets deleted. Anyhow, shortly afterwards, I took him into a real court, and that's when I won my case, in a real court, because you stand two chances in a VA adjudication. They call it an adjudication, the VA court. Your chances are slim and none. Those are the two chances you stand when you go before the VA. But now, with the law changed, unless they delete this new law, we're going to have a lot of things change here. We're going to have more veterans who will get a lawyer into their case early, and this is where you need the attorney. You need him on your case early because previously, they wouldn't even allow an attorney into the regional office building. An attorney was not even allowed into the regional office building. And this time, you'll get attorneys from the beginning, and we'll have a, let's say we'll have a level playing field, which we did not have before. We're expecting a level playing field. And Senator Craig vowed that he's not going to let them kill this law that he put together. Now, Senator Craig has been a guy who has been on our side. He's been a pleasant surprise for us. He's I will say he's an arch conservative, but what he said is if these prisoners down in Guantanamo can have a lawyer, then our veterans deserve a lawyer. And he fought for this bill. But, you know, generally, most of the people in the Senate I don't trust, because when I was trying to find out who the senators were who put a hold on this bill and were going to vote it through the 110th Congress again, I called 30 senatorial offices, and not one of those 30 senatorial offices gave me the information as to the senators that were causing this problem, that were in collusion with the DAV. 30, including my own two New York senators, would not even give me the information. So at that point, I would say I have a total mistrust of our Senate. Good example is Arlen Specter. So I don't have to tell you about Arlen Specter. He has threatened to take me up for contempt of Congress twice, and I say let's go. And the first time they called it off, and they changed the charges to a Washington, D.C. health code violation and reckless endangerment. And he's threatened to take me in again for calls for 10 years in prison, contempt of Congress. And I say, let's talk about your court. Let's talk about the Veterans Court when I have this hearing that has had over 18,000 cases go through it since 1988 with a grand total of 194 veteran wins. So this will give you a pretty much of an idea what kind of a court it is that has 194 wins out of over 18,000 cases, slightly over 1%. The VA's adjudication rate is 4%. It never goes above that. And then if you get into the court, you're another 1% on top of it. But, you know, I say court, and let's put that court in quotation marks. It's not a real court. Everyone who's been there knows it's not a real court. But I have something here from a British newspaper, The Herald, on their website, and I think this will be of interest to your listeners here, Dr. Stan. War wounded, overwhelming Army health care system. And this is by Ian Bruce, the defense correspondent. The U.S. Army's health care system for wounded soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan has been overwhelmed by sheer numbers, according to a new government report by the Services Inspector General. There are only 30 physical evaluation staff to process disability claims for the 32,000 U.S. casualties of the two wars, and almost every medical holding facility for returning veterans lack qualified staff. In parallel with public complaints this week about long treatment delays for British soldiers suffering from psychiatric disorders after frontline tours of duty, the U.S. report said the provision of military mental welfare specialists was totally inadequate. Now, while the U.K.'s Ministry of Defense admits 2% of veterans have shown signs of post-traumatic stress disorder or other behavioral abnormalities, the U.S. Veterans Affairs Department admits that as many as 1 in 4 of the regular and the National Guard troops admitted in its hospitals are affected. Now, the VA...
Hold that off right there.
I'm sorry.
We'll be back in just a moment here. 1 in 4, well, the figure we have is 30%, 25%, 30%.
Yep.
Our boys are coming back. They're ill, and some of them will never... I'd never, of course, be normal after this.
Well, I'll never be the same, Dr. Stan.
Well, go ahead, pick up the story there, Arthur.
Okay, the VA has now ordered a full and immediate review of facilities at its 1,400 hospitals and clinics. while the White House has instructed the Pentagon to review its procedures for handling the wounded. More than 1.5 million U.S. regular and part-time soldiers have served year-long tours of duty in Iraq or Afghanistan. I didn't think it was that much, 1.5 million, but I guess it has mounted up since 2003. And VA sources are now predicting a potential PTSD problem which could far exceed the psychiatric toll from Vietnam in the 1970s. That would be awesome. If this is true, this is awesome. Britain admits 2,100 Iraq veterans have been treated for mental health problems, with more than 200 developing PTSD. Welfare charities fear the final toll could be 10 times higher. The study comes a day after the Pentagon forced Lieutenant General Kevin Kiley, the U.S. Army Surgeon General, to resign over the scandal of poor outpatient treatments of wounded soldiers at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington. And that came from the Herald in Great Britain. And
well, I think people have no idea of the magnitude of this problem. Now, how much of this is post-traumatic stress? How much of it is depleted uranium? How much of it is a reaction to the vaccines? Because they're doing something that is totally unconscionable. And I know this from because I got a frantic call this week from one of my friends whose son is going to be going over there. And he was to get all of his shots, and this would be 6 or 8 shots in a matter of a couple of days. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not safe.
Yeah.
Because these shots, even if they don't have anything else in them, which they may very well, we know that in the past they've used experimental vaccines, but the anthrax vaccine is a terrible vaccine, and we have, of course, all sorts of information on that. And actually, if you get a bad lot of that, it'll wipe out a whole Air Force base. 30 or 40% of the people would be just incapable of doing duty, and of course you had to retire from the military in one instance. And we have a 14% on the anthrax vaccine, but they're going to give them anthrax, and then a whole battery of other vaccines, and they're giving a one time, and each one insults the immune system, it creates inflammation in the brain, and they know that. There's aluminum there, it gets into the brain as a direct result of the immunization. They should get their shots spaced over a period of time, and they're not doing that. And this can, in many of the instances, produce permanent either neurological abnormality or permanent autoimmune disease, such as asthma or other manifestations of autoimmunity, because we're simply mobilizing the immune system so rapidly. So it is little wonder that so many of the people are coming back. They've been actually injured by our government. And the people who are doing it, I do not believe, are stupid at all. But, of course, when you're in the military, you either do it or you get court-martialed.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, a quarter of U.S. war vets have been diagnosed with mental disorder. And this was a study by AFP published just March 12th, just came out. A quarter of the Afghanistan and Iraq war veterans treated with U.S. government-funded health care have been diagnosed with a mental disorder, according to a study published here.
Well, that's all. We'll be right back. Right. That's a burn cloud. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sidney Arthur saying that about 25% of our veterans of the Second Gulf War have been diagnosed with some sort of a post-traumatic stress or mental disorder. 25%. 25%. Pick up the story there, Arthur.
Well, when psychological disorders such as domestic violence were included, the number of war veterans suffering from mental illnesses rose to 31%. And the instances of mental illness among recently discharged troops and members of the National Guard are significantly higher than those of a study published last year, which examined active duty troops, the lead researcher told AFP. The study found that while a third of the returning troops were accessing mental health services, only 12% were actually diagnosed with a mental illness or psychological disorder. Now, that's a big difference, said Karen Seal, who's a physician and a researcher at the San Francisco Veterans Affairs Medical Center. Of significant concern was the finding that 56% of those diagnosed had more than one mental illness. In other words, not just one thing. More than one, 56%. When people have more than one diagnosis, they become more challenging to diagnose, and more importantly, we believe more challenging to treat, she explained. The study comes just days after the Bush administration vowed a comprehensive review of veteran care following revelations that soldiers being treated at the renowned Walter Reed Army Medical Center while living in a building with mold-covered walls, infestations of mice and cockroaches, and holes in the ceiling. That scandal exposed a broader problem with the underfunding of the VA system, said Joe Davis, who is a spokesman for one of these service organizations. A backlog of more than 860,000 medical claims and waiting times of up, boy, I thought it was 780,000. Now they're saying the latest thing, 860,000. And waiting times of up to a year for treatment. Many of the troops coming home are not getting the help they need. And that includes treatment of mental disorders, which are a predictable result of the kind of stresses troops face under combat. And war changes everybody, and everybody is going to have to deal with it in one way or another. The military is not doing enough on the preventative side or the treatment side because the military's role is to patch them up and send them to the VA. The VA is not doing enough because they did not prepare for the huge influx of new customers coming in from the wars, and they haven't even budgeted for it yet. The VA is totally overwhelmed. They can't cope with what's going on, Dr. Stan. And early detection and treatment is very critical. And the study authors wrote, if the military is to prevent chronic mental illness among troops, which threaten to bring the war back home as a costly personal and public health burden, the results also signal a need for improvement in the primary prevention of military service-related mental health disorders, particularly among our youngest service members, the authors concluded. The researchers examined the records of 103,788 veterans of these operations who were first seen at VA facilities between September 30th, 2001 and September 30th, 2005. About 29% of war veterans accessed VA health care facilities, the study found. The most common diagnosis was post-traumatic stress disorder among 13% of troops, followed by anxiety and adjustment disorders among 6% of troops and depression and substance abuse among 5% of the troops. More than half of the troops studied were younger than 30 years of age. 13% were women. Nearly a third were members of ethnic minority groups. And nearly half were veterans of the National Guard or Reserve components, the study found. The troops most at risk, now this is important, are those aged between 18 and 24, our youths, the study found, but mental illnesses were common amongst all subgroups. And the study has been published now in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Archives of Internal Medicine. That's a very important study, Dr. Stan. I was hoping I'd get this in time for your program tonight, and it just came in today for me.
Well, I really think it's so tragic to think of all of these kids. We're talking about probably at least a third of the people. We have over, 1.4 million who've gone through there, come back from the Gulf War, and over a third of them are mentally ill. Something's wrong with their mind. Now, whether it's post-traumatic stress or something else, well, we're not going to discuss that tonight. What we are going to discuss is the terrible burden for the individual, the financial burden. I mean, Paul Wolfowitz, the people who got us into this war said it cost maybe $20 billion. Got to be an easy war. Well, we've already spent over $400 billion on the military, and of course, Dr. Joe Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, says this war is going to cost us $1.5 to $2 trillion by the time we finish taking care of our veterans. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm simply pointing out that in addition to the human suffering that's involved, you know, a third of the 1.4 million men who come back are having trouble with their minds. And a lot of these minds will never be normal again. And of course, this is in addition to all those who've lost arms and legs, their sight, their hearing, and those who've died. But then, of course, if you look at it from the financial point of view, this is going to bankrupt our nation. We're already the largest debtor nation in the world, with almost $9 trillion in debt. And according to the Nobel Prize-winning economist, Professor Joseph Stiglitz, he estimates that this war is going to cost between $1.5 and $2 trillion by the time we get through to having to take care of all of these tragic young men. Many of them will have to take care of the rest of their lives. And this will simply be one more coffin in a nail in the financial coffin of our nation. And where is the outcry? One reason to stop this war, if you don't care about the human suffering, is at least as far as the financial stability of our nation, unless, of course, maybe this is being fought to destroy the financial stability of our nation. Because if it is, we're well on the way to accomplishing that, ladies and gentlemen. And if you know anything at all about the people who planned this war long ahead of time, that's the Project for the New American Century Group, you realize, of course, these people have no loyalty to America. They have a loyalty to a different source of power. So pick the story up there, Arthur.
Okay. I have something that came out of one of your papers out there in California, the Los Angeles Times. I don't know if you're familiar with the writings of Michael McCarthy.
No, I'm not, but they get really good articles in the L.A. Times.
Okay, it's called Killing U.S. Troops Slowly. An editor's note here. Some Bush administration officials have expressed shock at the mistreatment of Iraq war veterans at Walter Reed and other medical centers. But this scandal has many antecedents, including the neglect shown to many veterans who served in Vietnam and the first U.S. war with Iraq. In this guest essay, writer and political organizer Michael McCarthy explains why the latest disclosures shouldn't come as that much of a surprise to the Pentagon or the White House. 25 years ago, March 14, 1981, Jim Hopkins, Marine veteran of Vietnam, born on the Marine Corps birthday of November 10th, drove his Army Jeep through the glass doors and into the lobby of the multi-million dollar showcase edifice of the Wadsworth VA Hospital at Los Angeles.
Hold that thought, Arthur. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is simply reading from an article in the Los Angeles Times about a veteran of the Vietnam War. You remember that, of course, ended in 1974. This is 1980 or 81. Why this young man, this veteran, drives a Jeep through the front glass of the one of the more elaborate Veterans Administration hospitals. Was that the Wadsworth Hospital?
Yeah, Wadsworth in Los Angeles.
Go ahead.
He did so to protest the gross, willful, and the negligent treatment given U.S. veterans within the VA system, specifically those veterans of the U.S. War in Southeast Asia or the Vietnam War. He fired rounds from his AR-14 into the official pictures of then-President Ronald Reagan and ex-President Jimmy Carter. For emphasis, then, he fired his .45 caliber handgun and a shotgun, screaming that he was not receiving the medical attention needed. Hauled from the hospital by law enforcement, he screamed into the cameras that his brain was being destroyed by Agent Orange. That sent both a shockwave and a wake-up call through the U.S. and became a clarion call to thousands of veterans who felt the very same as did Hopkins. Ron Bitzer, director and founder of the L.A.-based Center for Veterans Rights, and I took up his case. My specialty was dealing with vets suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, who had come into conflict with law enforcement due to their illness. Hopkins' case gave national voice to three major issues for vets. Number one, the failure of Reagan's administration to investigate the damage caused by Dow Chemicals and Monsanto's dioxin-based defoliants spread all over Southeast Asia, known as Agent Orange. There were 12 or 13 different firms that made Agent Orange, so Blue and other quaint names, and its refusal to treat vets and their families for its damaging effect on both, especially the obvious appearance of birth defects of children born to the vets. Number two, the refusal to acknowledge the illness of PTSD and to investigate its damage on vets and to provide appropriate treatment. Number three, the callous and insulting disrespect shown the vets by Reagan and his efforts to cut both the benefits of the vets and to close their outpatient treatment centers. After being released from inpatient treatment from the VA hospital where we had him transferred from the L.A. County Jail, Hopkins went on a speaking tour to vets. Despite our best efforts to help him, Hopkins died on May 17, 1981, with an open liquor bottle and an empty pill bottle found next to his body. The news of his death spread across the country, sparking a sit-in of the Wadsworth VA lobby by veterans who had come to view Hopkins as a hero. As Reagan ultimately ignored and then ridiculed the veterans while the VA proclaimed its innocence of neglect, the protest grew until it became a hunger strike led by highly decorated Vietnam combat veterans. The hunger strike drew mass coverage by the U.S. and world news in the face of the aroused public. Reagan ignored calls for investigation but held off forced eviction. When we rejected the government's poor faith negotiations, Reagan called in the federal forces, but we were prepared and within days were camped out in front of the White House and had forced meetings with various congressional veterans committees. Fearing that any moment one of the vets would die and would trigger an armed response by the many outraged veterans across the country, Congress finally agreed to negotiate a compromise. A veteran strike would end after 53 days and Congress would override Reagan so that the vet centers would remain funded and open. Thank God. And there would be scientific and medical investigations into both the effects of dioxin defoliants and into the illness of PTSD. But despite it taking so long for the government to address the issue, the substandard quality of care in the military and VA hospital was not news. In 1976, Ron Kovic's Born on the 4th of July was published, a full 5 years before Hopkins' protest. In this book, Kovic, a paralyzed combat veteran of Vietnam, documented in graphic literary style the mistreatment of vets in both hospital systems. But nothing changed. In 1989, Oliver Stone made Kovic's book into a movie featuring an Oscar-nominated performance by Tom Cruise playing Kovic. But neither the Congress nor the presidency changed the continuing ill treatment given veterans. Now we get the Desert Storm. Desert Storm that under Reagan's Republican successor, George Herbert Walker Bush, the U.S. launched Operation Desert Storm, which extensively used depleted uranium weapons. Vets came home from that U.S. victory complaining of various kinds of poisoning, both from the depleted uranium and the suspected effects of chemical warfare allegedly used by Saddam Hussein's forces. The illness came to be collectively known as the Gulf War Syndrome, and like the earlier response to illnesses related to Agent Orange, the military and the VA immediately began denying any causal relationship to the vets' complaints and those weapons. That's history repeating itself, Dr. Sam. In other words, nothing had changed since. Now, after all these years, when we look at the scandal of Building 18 and Walter Reed, where the Washington Post reported that part of the wall is torn and hangs in the air, weighted down with black mold, and that signs of neglect are everywhere, mouse droppings, belly-up cockroaches, stained carpets, cheap mattresses, we know that still nothing has changed. Now, today it's undeniable that those who mastermind these callous, destructive wars against the poor people of the world have the same callous disregard for the health and welfare of our working and poor people who are sent to fight these wars. In a nation where profit rules over health care, how can one avoid the reality that this government cares not for its people, but only the power of profit? It no longer can. The war against the people of Southeast Asia was a war based on a president's lie, an attack on the U.S. in the Gulf of Tonkin that never occurred. It is that way akin to the current president, based on the lies of obviously mentally incompetent madmen, far more concerned with the false righteousness of his crusader's mission and as it suits his petroleum industry masters and concern for the American people. As the great anti-war movies, All Quiet on the Western Front, Paths of Glory, Johnny Got His Gun, Coming Home, Born on the 4th of July, have illustrated time and time again, governments use poor working people as their cannon fodder discarding those who survive as they do their junk military weaponry, while the manufacturing engines of war profit and outlive war. For over 4 years, news stories have addressed the Bush Republican cuts in the VA budget. Simultaneously, the dollar amount spent by Bush Republicans has risen, amazingly enough, to an astronomical figure of over $400 billion. Now, correspondingly, the profits of the military-industrial media complex have grown exponentially with the war budget increases. Simultaneously, the number of injured veterans has outgrown the VA's negligently conceived plan of treatment, and as a result, this is in keeping with the malevolent attitude of Bush-Cheney, these two who are married in purpose. The calls for impeachment of Bush-Cheney et al. Because their malfeasance in office, deliberate lies and misuse of government services in pursuing their war of petroleum profit and their acts of war crimes have done little. They've done little to move Congress into any action. However, nothing has been as clear as the total and systemic neglect for the well-being of the average American citizen than the outrage that continues within the military medical system and that of the VA. And why have these systems not been fixed as the politicians clamor for reform time after time? And it's more than just denial. There is far more profound questions to be asked about this systemic maltreatment. Why would a Congress, which functions as the chief lobbyist of a for-profit health care system, appropriately see to the delivery of the best example of socialized medicine? Why is it that every time harbingers of economic doom speak of reform, they talk of cutting the social welfare programs of Medicare and Social Security? Because the system is geared to fail. Its failures hidden under the flag of patriot zeal until there is a disclosure of its gross human casualty. The truth is that Reagan Republican administration, the chief proponents of for-profit trickle-down economics, and its quisling Congress did not move. Quisling was the Norwegian traitor in World War II, for those who may not know who Quisling is. Congress did not move until faced with the threat of a popular uprising led by Vietnam vets. The conditions of Walter Reed are but symbolic of an entire system of malfeasance and mistreatment as rotten and anti-human as when we took on and defeated Reagan 25 years ago, as fetid and of ill purpose as the wars that produce them. In virtually every appearance by elected politicians when they speak of the current war publicly, they call out to support for our troops. Yet they refuse to address that which is killing them, the war itself. And roused by these hucksters, the pathetically deluded, self-injuring American public adorns their cause with support our troops stickers, while refusing to understand that they are in fact supporting our troops with lip service, as their own government is killing them slowly. With more war in the planning as I write this, let me suggest that ruling power, especially the reactionary power of Bush-Cheney, will never relent unless it faces overthrow by democratic, yet undefeatable force. That time has come again, or again, nothing will change except the time that matters will worsen. This is from Michael McCarthy at the Los Angeles Times. It's quite a strong piece.
Unfortunately, Arthur, you know, the Democrats are going right along with this.
They pay
lip service to doing something, and yet, of course, within the last week, there was a piece of legislation that went through. There was an amendment inserted there that said, under no circumstances can the Bush administration go to war with Iran without, of course, permission of Congress. And they took that out and then go ahead and gave him the massive amounts of money that he requested. Now, before we go on, let's go ahead and get your telephone number out and how people can get in touch with the Veterans for Constitutional Law if they have a problem.
Okay, I'm Arthur Bernclough. I'm the Executive Director of Veterans for Constitutional Law, and we need help, folks. We really need help because we're out there. We're out there walking point. We're on the front line, and we're the first to draw the fire, and we're also the first to return the fire. And we do need help. We do need donations. And nobody from our group gets any more than a dollar a year. Most of us are disabled veterans, and our goal is legal parity for America's veterans, equal to that of the rest of the nation. And we're out there fighting veterans' claims, and there's a nice few thousand veterans who would not have gotten any benefits if we weren't around. And we're doing the job that the service organizations should be doing, and they're not. And I can be reached, anybody from our organization can be reached at this address. We're Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we are at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. And our zip code is 11777, 11777. And we can be reached by telephone. And any calls made, the calls will be returned to you. Any letters written, the letters will be answered. And we want to know if you're having problems with the Happiness Exchange. We call the VA the Happiness Exchange. If you're having any problems with them, we want to know. We can very likely help you and help you claim. And the best number to reach us at is 631-474-4261, 631-474-4261, and in all likelihood, we can very, very likely help your case. A lot of people tell us that we've been with this service organization for 20, 25 years or more, and they haven't done anything for us since. It's time to leave them. Bad habits can be broken. And we'll advise you on how you can fight this case. And if you can't fight the case the right way with the VA, we'll advise you how you can get into court and fight your case in a real court. And generally, it amounts to this. The sooner you get your case into a real court, the faster you're going to collect your benefits. You know, this nonsense that's going on with this new lawyer bill that was passed, and now the service organizations are trying to repeal that lawyer bill. Here's something interesting that came in from the former judge of the Veterans Court, former chief judge, Frank Q. Nebiger. And he says here that veterans should be allowed to use attorneys for their claims. Now, he says, I can state with certainty that vast numbers of benefit claims could be resolved much sooner if a claimant were able to exercise a choice to seek legal counsel in the beginning of the process. Now, this judge has spoken, good man, Frank U. Nebiger, and he's the former chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, and he supports all legislation to allow veterans to use attorneys in all phases of the VA claims process. Now, Judge Nebiger sent a letter to Representative Steve Beyer, Republican of Indiana, who was the chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, stating his arguments. This Steve Beyer is a bad actor, bad guy. I would like to thank Jeff Schrady, Communications Director of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, for providing a copy of this letter. And the background here, Judge Nebiger, all the time he was a judge, he was fighting to try to get lawyers to represent veterans and to have the law changed. And here is his letter to the chairman. I understand that your committee has recently received S-2694 and that a conference with the Senate committee is scheduled for September. I'm also informed that you may have misgivings as to the wisdom of permitting lawyer representation of veterans for initial claims for benefits. The purpose of this letter is to shed some light on what is really at stake in the legislative effort from the perspective gained from my 11 years as the chief judge of this court. I submit respectfully, that it demeans our veterans to impose upon them the VA's paternalistic policy, which carries the inescapable implication that they lack sufficient intelligence and common sense to to choose between veteran service organization representation and retain counsel with respect to their personal claims. I am convinced from the thousands of appeals that I've seen before the court that if many claims have been handled, had been handled by legal counsel from the outset, a remand from the court would not have been necessary. The error rate in decisions by the Board of Veterans' Appeals far exceeds that of any other administrative agency in the government, and the requisite demands by the court add more years to the final disposition of veterans' claims. In my view, something must be done to help veterans avoid this ingrained delay in processing claims, especially for today's claims, which involve increasingly intricate legal and evidentiary issues. To that end, I can state with certainty that vast numbers of benefit
hold
claims...
Hold that right there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been Arthur Bernthal. We've been talking about the plight of the veterans and the Veterans Administration system. You know, we hear a lot of talk about support for our men, our gallant men. We've got to give them the best care, and you know, the best weapons, the best care. But it's all simply rhetoric over reality, symbolism over substance. I mean, they're sending our boys over there into a meat grinder. Many of them will come back. You know, those who do come back with physical disability or mental disability. And then, of course, they run into a system that is designed not to take care of them. Now, this is not a Republican issue. This is not a Democratic issue. There's corruption in both political parties. And what we need to do, of course, is hold, you know, our elected representatives responsible. If they're going to send people overseas to fight in wars that the American people do not support, the least they can do is come up with the funding for them when they come home. And I think that we have to help Arthur Bernthal and the others who are really dedicated to getting care for our wounded veterans. So, Arthur, I really want to thank you and the people there at the Veterans for Constitutional Law for your yeoman's job and what you're trying to accomplish. One more time, I'd like you to get your telephone number and your webpage out so people know how to reach you.
Okay, it's I'm Arthur Bernthal, Executive Director with Veterans for Constitutional Law. Limited, and the address is 631, the telephone number, I'm sorry, is 631-474-4261, and we're always open to your calls, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, and the zip code is 11777, and to this end, Judge Nebaker says he can state with certainty that vast numbers of benefit claims could have been resolved much sooner if the claimant was able to exercise a choice to seek legal counsel in the beginning of the process. And it's simply about affording a choice to a veteran, a choice which is indeed a right enjoyed by everybody else in America to be represented by counsel in all disputes and claims. The idea of making it a criminal offense to pay or to receive a fee for initial claim service, as the present system does, is simply wrong. And Judge Nebaker calls the current system with the VA, it's a bad public policy, and said veterans should have a right to have their own attorney from the onset of their claim.
Well, we're out of time, Arthur. God bless you. Oh, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me on, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure working with you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just wanted you to hear what Arthur has to say. What a tragedy it is to send these young, healthy people over there, idealistic, patriotic, and have them come back with their lives ruined and their brains not working. It's one thing to lose an arm. It's one thing to lose a leg. It's another thing to lose the ability to use your mind. And, of course, we've actually done tremendous damage, tremendous numbers of our own people, as well as tremendous numbers of the people over in Iraq. And you have to understand, we are not there fighting primarily for oil, and that's a side benefit. And yes, certainly Dick Cheney and his friends are going to make a lot of money out of this. Halliburton, certainly Exxon, Chevron, Conoco, Royal Dutch Shell, BP Petroleum, they're going to make a lot of money out of this. The major purpose behind all of this is to demoralize our people, to expand the war over there, to plunge us into World War III, and then bring about a new world order and a new world religion, because in my estimation there are powerful spiritual forces which are energizing everything going on. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. If you want to learn about the other dimension, you need to get our 4-tape set on the supernatural and read the book that is written by Joanna Michelson, entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil. You need to see the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. You'll want to get some of the videos and DVDs put out by Carol Matriciano that we carry. Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, put out by Chris Petto, and his latest production, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, which will take you into the secret occult organizations which were here when America was created back in the 1600s and 1700s. And then, of course, Chris's latest production, which will be, we hope to have within a day or two, Riddles in Stone. That's Riddles in Stone. Going into the secret architecture of our nation's capital. We carry the book, of course, by that title, by Mr. Ovison, that the secret architecture of our nation's capital. I remember our capital was designed in the late 1790s. So what's secret about it? Well, did you know that there are over 23 zodiacs, complete zodiacs, in Washington, D.C.? Did you know that there are thousands of figures from the zodiac chiseled in stone and painted on the walls of Washington, D.C.? What is the statue of Sir Francis Bacon, who was the leader of the Rosicrucian movement, doing in the Library of Congress? And understand that there is another dimension. There are people who access the other dimension, and of course many of them are working at the highest levels of our government. And certainly you need, of course, to read and reread President Bush's first and second inaugural address. In the first inaugural address, he writes about the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. He uses the phrase twice. Who is the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm? And the second, of course, inaugural address, he actually talks about when our founders declared a new order of the ages. They were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And unless you understand what these phrases mean, you cannot understand anything that is going on today. So, of course, we ask you, of course, to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And don't forget the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. You need to have access to the information that will help you to understand the spiritual battle that's taking place today. And then, of course, we'd be glad to send you a free catalog. We'd be glad to send you a free newsletter. Just call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.